You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The Bay Area is entering a new era in low-income housing. We don't build housing projects like we used to anymore. It used to be big, labyrinthine complexes like Marcy Houses in New York, Cabrini Green in Chicago, and Geneva Towers in San Francisco. Today, conversations about development have to do with mixed-use, mixed-income communities. Much of the change has to do with how cities now think about urbanism, and a lot of it has to do with how affordable housing gets funded. Now, let's join KALW's Liza Veal for a trip around the city and back in time to see how affordable housing has evolved.
The story of public housing begins for us here, at a project called Holly Courts. We're in the Bernal Heights neighborhood of San Francisco.
Hi, my name is Adi Nagraj. I work at Bridge Housing Corporation.
And he's going to tell us the origin story.
Holly Courts was built in 1940, and it is the first public housing built west of the Mississippi River.
Bernal Heights didn't look too different than it does today. Just your classic San Francisco neighborhood, where on a steep hill overlooking the Mission District, up further is a park, and the wind is hectic.
The initial set of folks who were here were middle-class families who were either affected by the Depression or coming home from the war.
Now, picture San Francisco back in the 40s. There are African Americans coming into work on the shipyards. There are refugees from the Dust Bowl. There's immigrants from Mexico and China. And there are many, many veterans coming back from Europe and the Pacific. They all need housing. And the market is not providing it.
I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished.
Remember, we're just coming out of the Great Depression, the war. It's hard times, but it's hard times for everyone. The country is actually unusually unified. So the Roosevelt administration decides to do something the federal government has never done before. Make housing a basic right. Make it the government's problem. So Holly Courts goes up on this hill, and so do projects all over the country.
We show you a few of the hundreds of thousands of men whom it has put back to work, some of them after years of idleness. Carpenters, bricklayers, masons, plumbers, men from every division of the building trades are getting an honest day's work.
In the 1940s, the wealth gap was much less pronounced than it is now, and so people and families could really move in public housing temporarily, and after they accrued a certain amount of savings, they could move on to different housing options. And currently,
that's not the case, because the wealth gap has widened the gulf between expensive market rate prices and low-income affordable prices.
And currently, those housing options don't exist anymore.
By the 1950s, the dynamics in American cities had changed. White flight rearranged the demographics of the urban spread. And as affluent whites strained out of cities, so did American popular support for inner-city services.
As populations became more mixed and the clientele living in public housing became more black and brown, I do think that had an impact on politicians in D.C. on how much they wanted to fund a lot of urban initiatives such as housing and transportation.
So housing projects are created in a bout of patriotism, and then once politics shift, begin to be defunded and continue to be defunded every single year up until the present. Flash forward to the 1970s. The country has been through several social rights movements, and now there's a conservative backlash.
Well, the trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
Welfare and public housing are beginning to be termed entitlements by people like Governor Ronald Reagan of California. At the local level, affluent people are beginning to move back to cities, snapping up properties. Sound familiar?
Today, they're submitting a list of demands to Moscone, asking that he stop the threat of eviction once and for all.
By a strange convergence of history, neighborhood activism in San Francisco and a Reagan tax break program came together to create a new era in affordable housing. Here's how.
It was a very, very scary time. I'm Malcolm Young.
Malcolm Young is head of the Chinatown Community Development Corporation. He's going to take us through this part of the story. The place is Chinatown, 1970.
This was the time when San Francisco really started thinking about itself as a modern financial capital. And this was the era during which the financial district was expanding.
We're standing on the corner of Kearney and Jackson, looking at the International Hotel, a dormitory-style, single-room occupancy building. Hotels like this are the cheapest way to get a roof over your head, and they're all over the eastern and central part of the city. That's about to change.
So what was happening was a lot of these four-story SRO hotels built for these migrant workers were being bought by developers, residents were being evicted, the buildings were being demolished, and they were all being rebuilt as high-rises. And it was literally eliminating Little Manila on a building-by-building basis. It was threatening the elimination of Chinatown.
This is actually the moment where we start to see homelessness emerging on a real scale. So this SRO, the iHotel, becomes the site of a particularly fierce battle between the Chinatown community and the police.
The community is sick of it, the community is tired of it, and the iHotel on the corner of Kearney and Jackson becomes the last stand.
In order to protect the iHotel, the community forms a human barricade. It lasts off and on for 7 years, until August 4th, 1977, midnight, when the police have everyone forcibly removed.
The sheriff at that time came and literally broke through the human barricade by bringing in horses and dragging the seniors who lived in this hotel literally out of the building.
Activists respond by taking affordable housing into their own hands. They begin forming community development corporations, or CDCs, and the city government works with them, eager to help avoid another iHotel disaster.
And the CDC movement, at least for Chinatown, really literally sprang out of the ashes of iHotel. The way that we started things was, rather than doing new construction, which was way too expensive at the time,
they would use city loans to buy buildings and rent them out on the cheap, at no profit to themselves. This is an altogether different animal from the old federal public projects or other European or Scandinavian programs. At the moment the CDC's come up, Reagan has become the president, and he's building a strong conservative movement against government spending. His idea of solving the problem of affordable housing is to create a tax credit program that allows big corporations to invest in low-income housing.
So this was actually a Republican invention. And, you know, it was really motivated by kind of the idea of creating a tax break. But actually what ended up happening, and this is probably an unintended consequence, is it really, in a sense, revolutionized the affordable housing industry because it started bringing in large amounts of money into affordable housing.
So while the CDCs probably would have opposed Reagan's cuts to public housing, they happen to be perfectly positioned to capitalize on the new private and nonprofit sector solution. The main point is that now we have a whole set of private stakeholders and middlemen that invest in and profit from the industry. An industry, remember, that is funded in large part with tax credits. I asked Malcolm if it wouldn't be a much more efficient use of tax money to fund the housing directly through the government.
So I think the big risk for us in that model is if you put all your eggs in that basket, you're in a situation where the amount of housing that you can do is entirely dependent upon the political whim of where the country is at the time.
That's what happened when we went from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan.
That's true of the state. That's true of, you know, of the local jurisdiction. And you could be flush 1 year, and then you could be dry for the next 10 years. And I think with individual entities who are able to leverage several different sources of funding, it puts you in a situation where if one source dries up, you can try to figure out if there's a pathway somewhere else.
So most of the new affordable housing construction today is done by these nonprofit developers. Today, they're just like private developers. The only difference is they pay less taxes, they don't distribute income to shareholders and investors, and they often, though not always, build low-income housing in partnership with public funds. That's today. But whatever became of all those projects we built a half century ago? We have one last stop on our trip.
If you were to come out to Sunnydale, you would actually not believe that this place exists in a city that looks like San Francisco.
That's Tamika Moss with the Department of Housing for the Mayor's Office. We're in Visitation Valley, a neighborhood near the Cow Palace. Here's what Sunnydale looks like.
It's really spread out, and it isn't very dense, and it looks like row housing. There's yards in between, there's bars on the windows, there's a lot of boarded up buildings. So you drive up the main drag here on Sunnydale and you see a lot of abandoned looking housing projects.
In the half century since they were built, public projects have demonstrated exactly what fails when we concentrate poverty. People get stuck. They get in trouble. Nearly half of the city's homicides this year have been in or around the Sunnydale area. So the city is taking a bit of federal money, combining it with local dollars, and partnering with developers to fix up the projects. But we're not just talking about cleaning up mold. We're talking about transforming the site into a neighborhood where economic mobility is visible. The theory is they can do this by building mixed-income units among the projects. This initiative, HOPE-SF, is a public-private partnership. Here's the plan.
These are one- and two-story buildings on 50 acres of land. So we're going to build up a little bit so that you can have affordable housing units, you can have workforce housing, and you can have market rate housing, and you build an integrated mixed income community that way. So you wouldn't be able to tell a public housing unit from a market rate unit.
This is how affordable housing works now. There's no standardized program from the federal government, and the state of California has disbanded its main source of funding, known as redevelopment. So cities are innovating these kinds of programs along with the industry. The partnership is resulting in better, safer, more community-oriented housing. But it also puts us at the mercy of the marketplace. In San Francisco, I'm Liza Veal for Cross Currents.